Timing on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show today from WRCO Radio, we have a two-part subject. We're going to talk a little bit later on about the family farm and a new book that is out by a local author, or a man with local roots anyway. On the first part, we kind of tie it into the farms in the area, family farms, because it is the 25th anniversary of Milk into Cheese. Ed Chitwood joins us live in the studio. Ed, how can it be 25 years has passed?
I don't know where time went. It blew me away. Linda and I were talking about it the other day, and I said, we started it in 99, and I said, I can't believe 25 years.
Yeah, incredible. A lot has changed in farming since that time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has, Phil. When we first started out, Dave Druckery donated a truck for us, and Dean Davis used to haul for Meisters, and all the Davis have hauled in, and we went out. We didn't get the truck until like 8 o'clock at night, and you could donate milk. And so we went out of these farms that I've never been on before, trying to find the light in the milk house and and trying to exactly take 1,000 pounds out of there. And Dean's turning it on and off, and we're measuring the stick. So it kind of went by the wayside. Then we had Lynn Walmer farmed, and he kind of opened it up for us. He said, I'd like to donate. So we figured out what 1,000 pounds of milk would cost, and people could donate money for that. And like I said, I'm the last guy to milk in my township. There are not the small ones around anymore. So basically, donating the milk is kind of gone by the wayside, but you can still donate the money. And 1,000 pounds of milk makes 100 pounds of cheese. And I guess we were trying to figure this out. I guess in the last 10 years, I think we have taken about 50,000 pounds of cheese to the local food pantries, right around 5,000 pounds a month. And our goal is to do it all year long. And we're doing the drive. We do it from now until Labor Day. So at Labor Day, we cut it off. We'll take a donation anytime of the year, but this is kind of our big drive, and we're not trying to, where our goal is 25,000 pounds of milk, which would be 2,500 pounds of cheese. We're not trying to get all our eggs in one basket, because we also have a hay ride and we also have a bowling tournament. The hay ride is probably the last of September, first part of October, whenever we think the leaves are going to be the prettiest and the Packers are playing to lay a game or something like that.
Sure.
The bowling tournament is always the first Sunday in March, because people are usually ready to get out. Temperature's been anywhere from 30 to 70 degrees. That works out. But right now, we're focusing on the drive. You can donate any money. 1,000 pounds of milk would cost about $200. Now, you don't have to give $200. You can give $20, $100, $50, $1. But I guarantee you, everything that you give us, 100% of it will go for the cause. I deliver the cheese. And a big thanks to Meisters. Jackie Ringelstetter kind of ballparked and got this thing rolling and got it all figured out for us. And now Trish Krieger does it for us, because Scott and Vicky are busy doing other things. So they've kind of streamlined this. They cut and wrap the cheese for us. I pick it up and deliver it.
What kind of cheese is it?
It's free. Sometimes it's Monterey Jack, sometimes it's Colby, whatever they have. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like super hot, or their specialty cheese. It's usually Monterey Jack or Colby right in there.
Something that'll work well if you're
right.
Cooking or eating or whatever.
Right,
then.
Right.
I see. So that works out really well. And, I think when you started, you focused just on one area, one pantry, but you've really expanded that, haven't you?
Yeah, when we started out, Father Roger Taylor and Pastor Bruce Jones were two guys in our vicinity. Not only were they good for their churches, they were good for the community. Father was in the Lions Club. He went to all the girls' home volleyball games. Bruce helped out with the wrestling team. They helped out. They got Vinny's, St. Vincent's going. So not only were they good for their churches, they were good for the community. And these guys kind of inspired me. So they planted the seed and we're just kind of nourishing the tree.
Mm-hmm. Continuing along there, when you were telling the story about back in the day with going in the middle of the night and getting milk, did you ever go to the wrong farm? You know, because might have got shot at.
No, we never did that. But I've got I have three. I think there's three people, and of course a small dairy farm now is 200 cows. But these guys milk about 30, 40 cows, and they have been with me for 25 years. And so these guys have bought 25,000 pounds of cheese themselves. They've always bought 1,000 pounds, which is phenomenal. It's kind of like a blood bank. You give a little, that's in your 11 or 7 gallon or whatever. These guys are at 2,500 pounds of cheese.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it really is.
Did you want to name drop them?
I probably not, because they live close to me and I'd probably get hornswoggled before I got home. So... I'm probably not going to drop any names.
Okay. No, we won't. We won't do that. So today is the start of it?
Today is the start of it. We were ahead of Grace, and I don't want to take anything away from Grace, so we kind of wait till the dust settles from Grace. And so it starts now. You can send your money to Linda and myself, and we're going to kind of wrap it up by Labor Day weekend. So from now through Labor Day weekend. And like I said, you can give any time of the year. I've already gotten two checks from two different people. They must have it on their calendar or whatever, and bang, I already got checks.
Okay. And what's your address? How do people get the money to you?
Our address is Ed and Linda Chitwood. It's 16025 Eddie's Lane. I didn't do that. The town board name, it's Eddie's Lane, Blue River, Wisconsin, 53518.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're famous. You have your own lane. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really something. I wish it was blacktop, but it's not.
On the side road there. So.
Yeah, yeah.
These food pantries, when you bring them the cheese, they have to be really appreciative, Ed.
When we started out, it was just Muscadet, because Father Roger had started the Muscadet pantry. And our goal was to go year round. Well, I think we lasted about 6 months. So I told Linda, I said, we got to do something else. And a lot of these numbers have gone up. A lot of these pantries were 20 people, and then they went to 40, and then they went to 60 and 80. And one of the pantries that I had 6 months ago had 90 people, and bang, just like that, they went to 200. So we started the hayride, which helped kick in a little bit more, and people are really generous. I mean, I had one guy when we were hauling milk, and he said, well, how much milk do you need? And I said, well, we were going for 10,000 pounds, or I think 15,000, and he donated 11,000 pounds. He said there was a time that I was really hurting, and the neighbors came in and did my chores and baled my hay and this until I got back on my feet. He said, it's time for me to turn around and give back to somebody else. So we did this for the pantry in Muscadet. Well, then after a couple of years, we had more money left over. And I thought it was kind of foolish to leave it set in the bank if you could help somebody else. So we took on Richland Center, and we helped the pantry up there. So it was with the hayride and that we got going. Well, then, again, the numbers went up. So then we started to have a bowling tournament the first Sunday in March. So then we had more money again. So, again, instead of sitting in the bank, we took on basketball, and then we took on Lone Rock. And I think we had four or five. And then we had Iowa County. Some people had given us there. So if it's your county, we kind of have to go with your pantry or whatever. So we did take some to Highland also. But right now we're not in the flush, but we're getting through.
Mm-hmm. The cheese that's delivered then, is it up to kind of divided into pounds then for people?
These are these are they're a 40-pound block, and they cut them into about one pound blocks, and they're wrapped, and then I deliver it usually the third week of the month. I take to Muscadet, Rissen Center. Lone Rock picks up theirs. Boscobo is if they need it or this or that. So I'm in contact with these people to say, hey, do you need cheese this month or don't you need cheese that month?
So why do you do it, Ed? You know, this is something that you've worked tirelessly over the last 25 years. Why do you do it?
I don't know. It's a lot of self-satisfaction. I guess it all rolls back to Father Taylor and Pastor Bruce Jones. I can't save the world. I'm just trying to help the people in our area. There was a thing in the bulletin years ago that said your family, the bishop said, your family comes first and then your friends. And then if you have more money, which I don't, but you pick out a charity. If you have more, you give out a charity again. So I guess we do this, we do the Walk with Grace, and we give to St. Jude's. And those are the three that I give to, the Linda that I give to. I guess Father Roger and Pastor Bruce just kind of inspired me. You know, they got involved in the community, and so I guess that's why we do it. But it's not, you know, a lot of people say, well, oh, it's a great thing you and Linda do. It's not a great thing that Linda and I do. It's a great thing that the community does, because if people didn't come to the hayride or the bowling tournament, or if they didn't give money here, it's what this community does. I mean, we are very fortunate to live where we live in a bumchuck nowhere. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but I'm glad I live where I live. And with this radio station is community orientated. I mean, I get a lot of mileage. I used to get a lot of mileage out of silage, but now I get a lot of mileage out of WRCO.
Doesn't rhyme as well, but
no, it doesn't. I'll have to work on that.
Work on that one. Then you know the hayride is coming up. That's always kind of predetermined. Last year, the leaves turning that was a little later in the fall.
Yeah,
a little less spectacular. It could be a good year, but you'll probably make that announcement sometime in September, won't you, Matt?
Yeah, we started that. I guess we've done that for probably 13 or 14 years. We started out with two wagons and we ended up with six. Neighbors, and then you run into complications there because somebody's doing soybeans or somebody's combining corn. And I said, hey, you know, or the guy has a family reunion. I said, family always comes first, but we always seem to manage to get through it. Mike Hansen, Al Moore, Larry Bailey, Larry Hatch, I don't know if I'm forgetting somebody, Nick Stitzer, Wes Hankey, all these guys. My sons, they drive a tractor. My brother has pulled one with his pickup. So we, like I said, started out with two and we ended up with six. And I think a couple of years ago, we were ready to leave, and there's about 20 people standing around there like a flock of sheep, and the wagons are full. So Linda and I are like the usher at church, walking alongside. Yeah, room for two here or four there. And we got everybody in, so it worked out good. And I think a couple of years ago, Linda had to go to Minnesota and stay with our granddaughter. So Sunnyside Bakery helped us out. They bake the cookies for us because Linda usually makes about 14 to 18 dozen cookies. And then we have lemonade and we have hot chocolate or coffee, water, depending on how hot it is or how cold it is. We've never been rained out. We've gone all the way from like 40 degrees to 80 degrees on these rides. But we have a hill that is back of our house that usually turns about 2 weeks before everything else gets pretty. So usually it's about the end of September, the first part of October is when we usually have the hayride.
That'll be another good fundraiser, and that's, again, a free will offering.
Yeah, it's a free will offering. There's lots of people. We don't shake the box in front of anybody. And if you got enough gas to get out there and give your kids, fill them up with cookies and lemonade or whatever and give them a ride, you know, we're not worried about that.
We don't think about it, but there are a lot of people that don't get to get up that close and personal on a farm to see, you know, to drive through the fields and the hills and things like that.
Kenda Tisdale, she worked at the Shopping News, and she said, well, you need to have a scavenger hunt. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, so Linda and her and I take we drive the route and we pick out, I don't know, 40 things. Well, people, I think the adults are looking harder than the kids. And and Linda said, well, you know, we had a cupola on there. And somebody, Linda said, well, what if people don't know what a cupola is? I said, well, they're going to have to ask somebody, you know, next to them. And I tell everybody, I said, it's when we get back, there's going to be a test. You have to know everybody's name on your wagon. And we get out about halfway and we stop. And Nature's Way helps us. They bring a porta potty. So we stop about halfway out and refill all the cookies and stuff. And I ask if anybody's not having a good time. And David Dax is my neighbor. And he said, yeah, I'm not having a good time. And I said, well, this is where you get off right here.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're out of there. Oh, well, that's awesome. Anything else you'd like to add as you look at the opening of, you know, kind of the real push here before the holiday?
I just want to thank WRCO for what you guys do for us. And I want to thank all the people in the area that contribute to this. I mean, you're helping somebody that you don't even know, and that's a great thing, I think. People need to get involved, whether it's a blood bank, Work With Grace, go volunteer at Vinny's or Goodwill or something. You know, just get involved in your own area.
And you've done that very well over the years, my friend. So you're no longer the lonely farmer. You've got a lot of friends, I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
Ed Chitwood joining us here, Milk and a Cheese, celebrating its 25th year. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Phil.
Welcome back to our morning show on WRCO and WRCE. We're kind of dovetailing in from the talk about the Milk and a Cheese benefit and local farms donating milk or money toward the milk, toward a little story about the family farm. And we're going to talk to an author who joins us live by phone today, Brian Reisinger, who has a new book called Land Rich, Cash Poor on the market. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So a little bit about your story. You grew up in the area, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I hope you don't mind my saying that actually the story begins a little bit with us listening to your station in my dad's barn. I grew up in the Spring Green area, working with my dad from the time I could walk. And I'm fourth generation. My dad is a third generation farmer. And my sister still works the farm with him and is working to take it over there in rural Spring Green area. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah, when I left a message, you said you kind of recognized the voice, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. We grew up here and you in the barn, and so it's honestly, it's a little bit of an honor for a local farm boy to be on the station with you this morning.
So, well, let's talk about that. Then you graduated from River Valley High School, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. I graduated from River Valley High School in 2003, and, you know, I'd worked with my dad all my life, and I found that my talent was more for words than cattle and crops, and so they'll still throw me in the tractor now and then, and I do help out on the business side, but I went on after River Valley to UW-Eau Claire, and I studied journalism and political science, and I worked as a journalist for a number of years, and I worked in public policy, and I started thinking about, you know, my roots growing up and how much I value that and how much I value my time there, and also about the world that I'd been in, seeing what was going on in our economy, what was going on with our government, and I thought it was important to write a story of what is happening to our farms and why.
How long has this book been in the works, Brian?
Well, I've had the idea for more than a decade, and but as far as actual work on the book, I really turned the page toward this project about 2 years ago and got interest in it and found that there's a realization that nationally we're losing our farms, they're disappearing, and that Wisconsin is kind of an epicenter of that. At the same time, there's a lot of amazing resilience. And so spending the last 2 years interviewing my family, spending the last 2 years investigating what's been going on in our economy has been a real honor. And I'm very lucky because I had this in the back of my mind for a long time. I talked to a lot of people, including my grandma, including other people from my grandparents' generation, going back several years, not knowing what I was going to do with it, but having just reams and reams of interviews with people who'd lived through the Depression and all these different times that would otherwise be lost in time. So I feel very fortunate for not necessarily knowing what I was going to do with it, but knowing I wanted to talk to people and figure out something to do with it someday.
Yeah, you talk about the four generations of your family farm, and you mentioned the Depression, but I think about all of the different eras and hardships. You know, the 80s farm crisis comes to mind, so, you know, they've survived a long, long time through some hardships, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. And the thing that was a really amazing discovery for me was seeing the places where what's happened in our country lines up with the things that my family experienced. And I think it's just we were in a time and a place, and it was a real challenge for our family at different points and places, but it's also a special thing to be able to look on back on that heritage. And what I tried to do with the book is I tried to tell a hidden history of each era. So with the Depression, actually, the Depression set in much earlier on farmers in the Midwest than it did for the rest of the country. Many people don't know that. I didn't know that until I dug into it. And you're right, going on up through each era, through the 50s, on up into the 1980s when my parents survived the farm crisis, on into the 90s and 2000s, each era I try to tell a hidden history beneath the surface, and I found that it really connected with something that occurred with my family, whether it was a harrowing story of farm injuries, or whether it was economic upheaval, or whether it was a beautiful story of something that our family overcame or something that shows our way of life. So I felt very fortunate for that.
I think about the Depression era, and it was terrible, as far as buying gas and those kind of things, but they also had meat, they had their own vegetables that they canned and everything like that. They were pretty well set up to survive through the Depression on the family farm, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. The amazing thing is it was such a difficult time, excuse me, but it was a time of major upheaval where also you had people climbing in the middle class. My grandpa survived the poverty of the Great Depression, and by the time he was a grown man, he was in the middle class and secured that middle class living for my dad and for us. And, that ended up being something that began to slip away from many farmers as time went on, but it's really incredible to see what they survived.
Yeah, I used to, when I first started, I would drive down the valley and see all the lights on in the barns. They were milking and doing chores. It's rare to see that anymore, Brian.
Yeah, it is. And that's where I do think it's important to talk about the serious issue that's been going on here. We've seen it all over Wisconsin. It's also happening all over the country. We've lost 45,000 farms per year annually in the last century. That's based on some data that I got for the book that I analyzed in a new way and took a look at. And it was just a shocking number to me. And, it's incredibly sad. It also has a huge impact on our food supply. It is one of the issues that is contributing toward higher prices for food that has risen at a far higher rate than the rate of inflation that everybody's debating. It has impacts on the security of our food supply during disasters. And it also contributes to the rural-urban divide in all these issues of hollowing out of the rural economy, things that have been happening to our area that are difficult and unfortunate, and they have an impact on the whole country. Now, I do want to say, though, the flip side of it is there's incredible resilience. We still have 2 million farm families. My dad and sister are still farming. There's 2 million farm families across the country, farms of all sizes, and they are working hard to continue to be able to feed this country. And so there are things that we can do about it, but it's definitely a story of difficulty. And I think it's one that it's important that we face because it's right under our noses. And people locally you talk to, they know it. But I don't know if the rest of the country did.
I think, too, we've seen a resurgence in people, like farmers markets and things like that, and people wanting to know where their food comes from. So that's kind of turned around a little bit in the last few years, too, hasn't it?
It really has. It's an incredible opportunity that we actually have. I mentioned those 2 million farms. There's still 2 million farm families trying to farm. Some of them are farms that do supply our food, and some of those are larger farms. A lot of them are medium and smaller farms. 96% of them are family farms. That means we got nearly 2 million families that are working hard, and many of them have their farm as kind of side income right now. And if there was a way for that to be a growing entrepreneurial business again, imagine what we could do for our local economy and for the whole country. Now, that happens at the same time that you're right. People are more interested where their food comes from than they ever have been. So if we can connect that with more farmers markets, more restaurants carrying farm to table, more local places to buy food, more local grocery stores, more local specialty food stores, all of the above, all the different ways that people could get their food if we were buying more of it locally, we can have that big national supply chain. We can also have real rural regional economies that allow us to buy our food from all kinds of places, nationally and locally. I think there's a world where we can do that, where the farmer and the consumer can meet, because you're right, people are more interested in that than ever.
Having lived in Wisconsin, I know you've spent some time in Northern California as well. How's the agricultural climate in California compared to Wisconsin?
You know, I'll tell you, I'll always say that the happy cows reside in Wisconsin, first of all. the truth is that there's a lot of incredible agriculture all across this country. And you're right. I split my time. I spend part of my time on our family farm in southern Wisconsin. Lucky enough that my family still has that farm and I'm able to be there. And then part of my time in Northern California, small town up in the hills in Northern California near my wife's family. And so I see agriculture in both places. And in California, the farms are much bigger. They tend to have a lot of other things mixed in. There's a lot of dairy, but there's also a lot of fruits and vegetables and almonds in addition to your traditional row crops, things like that. So it's a really robust agricultural economy. Here's the thing. A lot of people remember during the happy cow debate, you know, those big California farms and meantime the Wisconsin farms were going down. The California farms have had a really hard time. And meantime, Wisconsin did carve out a niche for itself with a rural regional economy around our master cheesemaker program. And so there's ups and downs in both places. We want to see robust agriculture all across the country. And I think it's a really cool thing that Wisconsin has that strong regional economy around cheese that has allowed it to remain strong and resilient, even though we have lost so many farms and even though there have been some hard times.
Brian Reisinger, I guess, the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor. As you were doing your research, any stories that come to mind? Some things maybe you learned that you didn't know about your family's farm?
Yeah, you know, there are some really incredible ones. I could go on about that forever, but I guess the one that really sticks out most to me is I think about my dad growing up in the 1950s. He was 8 years old when my grandpa, Albert Reisinger, who a lot of people locally might still remember, fell off a corn crib, fell 30 feet and broke his back. And at the tender age of 8, you know, my dad stepped up to work on the farm. And to be honest with you, he never really let up. And so he's 72 now. And so he's been doing that for well over 60 years. And, you know, there's a lot of difficulty with that. I think about times he told me about walking in the bedroom and seeing his dad for the first time and discovering that. And that was a really difficult and dramatic thing to hear and to work through as I tried to figure out how to tell that story in the book. But it's also an incredible story of the kind of resilience we have. We have families like that all over the area. People who stepped up, people who learned to work hard, and people who have lived this. It's down in their blood. It's down in their bones. And when I think about that and I think about my dad doing that, it makes me really proud of what farm families in our area are able to accomplish as well.
Farming, I mean, it still is, but it really was dangerous back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it's dangerous today with major machinery and all of that sort of stuff, but boy, it really back in the day was. We actually, one of the first stories I tell in the book was of my grandpa's brother, and he was 2 years old when he was out in the hayfield. His dad didn't know, and the horses accidentally ran over him and injured his leg really severely. And he ended up living through that. That was Herman Reisinger, and he ended up living through that, and he ended up being able to be a successful farmer and businessman and really overcoming that. But boy, there were things like that that happened. There were wagons that ran over people. There were serious falls. I mean, back especially in the early days of pre-depression and depression, there just wasn't the machinery. And so there was all the heavy work that was done by hand, and there was so much more danger than there even is now. But to your point, it's been a dangerous profession all throughout, you know, the past century.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I grew up on the farm too in a different era, but when, you know, I was 7 or 8, I was probably driving, you know, the hay rake, which is unheard of now. Mm-hmm. If you put a 7 or 8 year old, of course, the machinery is a lot bigger, but that's how we grew up, right?
Yeah, that's right. I remember doing the side rake too. You know, it's amazing how things change. I mean, even me, I'm 39 years old now, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And I remember I tell stories about, you know, picking rock by hand. I'm sure there's a lot of people who grew up in our area doing that. We would walk the fields, we'd pick rock by hand until our bucket got full of rocks, and we'd dump them on the wagon, and it was under the hot sun. And it seems like something almost from another era now. My dad does have a rock picker that we can take through the field to help with that. But it's just amazing the amount of change in technology that has come and gone on farms. And the different things that people grew up doing, I never tire of hearing of those things.
Right. And then growing up on the farm, obviously that provided you a great work ethic that I think has probably helped you later in life, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, when I didn't farm, I struggled with that for a little while because I really felt like I should have. You know, I was the first eldest son in 4 generations who didn't, and I'm so grateful that my sister's been taken over. But it's something I struggled with. And what I discovered as I went out into my working life is that I was so fortunate to have grown up on the farm, learning to get up at 4 a.m. and get to work, because it's benefited me all my life. And it's something that, you know, honestly makes me feel close to my roots and close to my dad. It was something that was kind of a full circle thing. So, you know, growing up in the area that we grew up in is a really special thing. And I think people know that. And I'm just glad to get the chance to share that with more people.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
Many people aren't aware that Richland County has an organization similar to Big Brothers Big Sisters. For 35 years, Kinship of Richland County has made hundreds of matches between carefully screened adults and local children who need some extra attention. I'm Michelle Nolan-Karras, the director of Kinship. Occasionally, relationships don't work out, but it's amazing how often they do. Having a mentor can improve a child's self-confidence and help them succeed at school and in life. The mentor benefits from these matches, too. Often they last for years and continue into adulthood. If you would like to become a volunteer or refer a child, please contact us at 608-475-2886 or email us at kinshiprc@gmail.com. Donations to Kinship can be mailed to P.O. Box 51, Richland Center, Wisconsin. Your gift is tax deductible and much appreciated.
Stores open at Richland Center from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday and Reedsburg Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays 11 to 5. Town at countryrc.com.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
News Time at 6:30 is sponsored by Court and Main Furniture and Mattress, helping you create the home you can't wait to come home to. The forecast for today, sunshine at times and a high of 74, a few clouds and cool tonight with a low of 50. Right now in Richland Center, after the early reading this morning of 63, we are down from that. It is 57 degrees.
Hi, this is Taylor Hefner. Did you know that A-Plus Furniture and Mattress Outlet in downtown Richland Center is locally owned and operated? Stop in today and see my mom or Violet for all your furniture and mattress needs. We offer a variety of recliners, sofas, love seats, dining sets, bedroom sets, adjustable beds, and bedding, all at the lowest prices around. We also deliver, set up, and haul away your old. A-Plus Furniture and Mattress Outlet, located in downtown Richland Center, 475-6090.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. Here is what you need to know. More layoffs and branch campus closures will be on the table when the Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents meet in Madison Thursday and Friday. The number of UW two-year campuses has shrunk by 6, and more could be closed. UW leaders blame shrinking enrollment and revenues. Jay Rothman says his 2025-27 budget proposal would allow the UW system to shed its ranking of 43rd among 50 states in public funding and reach the national median. Rothman says it will take an additional $457 million annually to achieve that. Features of the proposed budget include extending the Wisconsin tuition program to students from families earning up to $71,000 annually, 5.3% general wage increases for faculty and staff, and emphasizing talent development. Rothman said he would not recommend tuition increases over the period covered by the biennial budget. The Republican vice presidential candidate's campaign says the press conference at the Kenosha County Courthouse will focus on crime and safety. Republican Senate nominee Eric Hovde, Representative Brian Stile, and Kenosha County Sheriff David Zerner will join Vance, as who has been no stranger to Wisconsin. J.D. Vance making 3 stops to the crucial battleground state in August. He was in Milwaukee Friday and spoke on crime and opioids. He also stopped in Eau Claire on August 6th. Democrats are targeting 16 assembly races and 5 Senate races in November. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein says voters are fed up with inaction on issues like PFAS cleanup.
We're letting everybody know that we have a plan in place. There's $125 million that we should be getting out the door to help these communities and the people that live there, and the Republicans refuse to do so.
Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer says voters are rejecting Republican tactics undermining democracy.
We intend to take the majority this fall to stop them from passing further proposals that would consolidate their own power and restrict voters' access to the ballot box.
The Wisconsin Democratic Party says it's prepared to spend millions to get its message out. Madison's first Wisconsin bus rapid transit line is nearly ready to roll. City officials announced yesterday that the east-west bus rapid transit line is set to begin service on September 22nd and will run about every 15 minutes through most of the day. Madison Mayor Sacha Rhodes Conway called the launch of a BRT monumental steps forward for the community and its transit system. Federal funding helped create a new maintenance facility, new charging technology, and a new fleet of all-electric buses. Some road lanes in that area have been painted red as a part of the BRT construction, which took place over the summer. The bus-only lanes will cover 9.5 miles of the 15-mile-long east-west BRT line. A task force put together by the governor has released its recommendations on how to address challenges facing the healthcare workforce. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez says one of those recommendations is to include ways to increase grant funding to employers so they can better retain and recruit staff. Other recommendations include adopting Medicaid expansion, increasing rates for home and community-based services, and helping healthcare workers navigate insurance benefit options. According to Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, Wisconsin faces a potential deficit of up to 19,000 registered nurses by the year 2040. An arena woman lost her life in a single vehicle crash over the weekend. Iowa County Sheriff Michael Peterson reports that around 10:25 Sunday night, the 911 center received a call of a motor vehicle crash at the intersection of U.S. Highway 14 and County Highway H in the township of Arena. The initial investigation showed that a vehicle operated by Philip White, 71 of Arena, was traveling northbound on County Highway H when it veered off the roadway, striking a power pole and stop sign before rolling over onto U.S. Highway 14. Philip White was transported to UW-Madison by Spring Green EMS with non-life-threatening injuries. His passenger, Karen White, 68 of Arena, was treated by Arena EMS and UW-MedFlight, but she died from her injuries and was pronounced dead by the Iowa County Coroner's Office. This was Iowa County's second fatality of 2024. A UTV crash Sunday afternoon resulted in multiple injuries. At approximately 3:45 in the town of Viroqua, a 14-year-old from rural Viroqua was operating a side-by-side UTV eastbound on Upper Maple Dale Road and failed to negotiate a curve to the right. The UTV tipped onto its left side and came to rest along the left edge of the roadway. The 14-year-old operator, a 15-year-old passenger from Steuben, a 14-year-old passenger from Gaze Mills, and a 14-year-old passenger from Soldiers Grove were all treated at Vernon Memorial Healthcare in Viroqua by late Sunday evening. All of the injured were released. The milk and a cheese donation drive is underway. Here's Michael Hernan with more.
The Milk Into Cheese donation drive is in its 25th year of operation. Here's Ed Chitwood about the drive.
1,000 pounds of milk makes 100 pounds of cheese. In the last 10 years, I think we have taken about 50,000 pounds of cheese to the local food pantries, right around 5,000 pounds a month. And our goal is 25,000 pounds of milk, which would be 2,500 pounds of cheese. We're not trying to get all our eggs in one basket because we also have a hay ride and we also have a bowling tournament. You can donate any money. 1,000 pounds of milk would cost about $200. Now, you don't have to give $200. You can give $20, $100, $50, a dollar, but I guarantee you everything that you give us, 100% of it will go for the cause. I deliver the cheese.
The donation drive is available for a limited time.
It starts now. You can send your money to Linda and myself, and we're going to kind of wrap it up by Labor Day weekend. So from now through Labor Day weekend, and like I said, you can give any time of the year. I've already gotten two checks from two different people. They must have it on their calendar or whatever, and bang, I already got checks.
You are invited to place a donation to contribute to the drive.
Our address is Ed and Linda Chitwood. It's 16025 Eddie's Lane, Blue River, Wisconsin, 53518.
For WRCO News, I'm Michael Hernan.
We'll take a look at that forecast for today and the rest of the week next.
The people at your Touchstone Energy Cooperative wear many hats. Your customer service rep might also coach at the local middle school. Or some of our line workers are also volunteer firefighters. It's true. We take pride in serving our members. That's why you'll find us helping out in our community. Because we not only work here, we live here.
Richland Electric Cooperative is your Touchstone Energy Cooperative, your source for power and information. Sunshine to partly cloudy, a high of 74. Tonight, a few clouds and cool, a low of 50. Partly cloudy and mild Wednesday, a high of 76. Near 80 Thursday and also 78 Friday. For Saturday's high, 86. Sunday's high, 90. Right now at WRCO Studios, after a midnight reading of 63, we're at 57 degrees. Producers of award-winning cheeses for over 98 years, Meister Cheese Company in Muscadet invites you to stop by their factory cheese store located in Muscadet's Industrial Park. With a large selection of Wisconsin-made cheese, sausage, mustards, and spreads, and you're sure to find a taste-tempting treat. Hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and Saturday 9 to 1, or visit them anytime on the web at meistercheese.com.
Parents, keep those backpacks light to avoid strain on your child's back. A lighter load means a safer school day. Sponsored by Muscadet Mini Mart, Burnham Lumber, Highland School District, and Chitwood Electric.
Time today on WRC Radio is sponsored by the Homesteader Store and Simon's Recreation Complex. A look at the local and area scene, details on the Brewers getting back to action with a key series this evening. Those stories and more in just a moment.
LS Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. The fastest growing tractor line in Wisconsin is LS Tractor, part of the LG group of companies. These high quality four-wheel drive diesel tractors are one of the best values in compact tractors. They have silky smooth hydrostatic transmissions. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of LS tractors to fit your needs. Learn about the full line of LS tractors at Southern Wisconsin Tractor Experts, the Homesteader Store.
I'm Phil Nee with sports. The high school football schedule gets underway this weekend. River Valley co-head coach Dan Makovic talked about the Blackhawks' recent scrimmage.
I was very pleased with our scrimmage results. Cuba City is always a tough team, and we scrimmaged them right away. And Chad's been doing a great job with the offense this year, and we were able to move the ball more efficiently than we have in the past. Our team was very physical and excited to play football, which is something that we've been looking forward to, having a little bit of enthusiasm. And then we scrimmaged Poinette. Things went really well against them. They came out ready to run the ball, and our defense stepped up in a big way. So I saw a lot of the things that I was looking for.
The River Valley football team opens up with a home game against Reedsburg on Friday night. Last night in Home Talent Night League Baseball, a makeup game, Jefferson got the win against Dodgeville 5-4. It's down to the final two teams for the 2024 Church League Softball Tournament Championship. Church of the Nazarene, which suffered its only loss of the season in the semifinal round of the tournament last week, 22-21 to the Mission, advanced to the championship game, shutting out St. Mary's by a score of 4-0. Thing last night. The Church League tournament concludes this evening, 7 o'clock on the East Diamond, a rematch at Church of the Nazarene and the Mission. That will begin at 7 o'clock. If the team wins from Church of the Nazarene, the same two teams will play at 8:15. League officials have arranged umpires for the game. The respected manager was gone, and the Cy Young Award winner was traded. The Brewers were finally expected to drop back after winning the division title five times in 6 years. Don't look now, but Milwaukee has the biggest division lead in Major League Baseball, 11 games over tonight's opponent, the St. Louis Cardinals. The loss of outfielder Christian Yelich hasn't been good, but the team has a 14-9 record since he was sidelined. Put it all together, and manager Pat Murphy has a good chance to be named National League manager Manager of the Year. The Brewers open up against the Cards tonight. 72-52, their record, first in the National League Central. Well, the Cardinals are 61-63, second in the NL Central. Frankie Montes goes to the mound for the Crew this evening. Arizona got the win against Miami last night, 9-6. In the American League, Kansas City 5, the Angels 3, Houston 5-4 over Boston, Oakland 3, Tampa Bay nothing. Interleague play saw the Mets beat Baltimore 4-3, Cincinnati 6-3 over Toronto, Texas 4, Pittsburgh 3, San Diego 5-3 over Minnesota, San Francisco 5, the White Sox 3, and the Dodgers 3-0 over Seattle. Just 2 yards rushing in the first preseason game brought questions about running back A.J. Dillon's future with the Packers. Head coach Matt LaFleur answered all of those questions with Sunday's game in Denver. LaFleur held his important players out, among them Dillon. He was one of 31 players who did not take the field in the 27-2 loss. Sean Clifford, who played quarterback for a time that night, was disappointed with his performance.
Definitely humbled today. Just did not make the plays when they were there. Just a lot of opportunities just missed today. Just gotta be better. You know, I pride myself on making those plays, especially in critical moments, third downs, and just wasn't able to convert. So lots to work on.
The Badgers volleyball team is expected to be one of the country's strongest units once again. The American Volleyball Coaches Association preseason poll rates Wisconsin third, behind defending national champion Texas and Big Ten conference favorite Nebraska, last year's NCAA runner-up. I'm Phil Nee with an update on Tuesday Morning Sports. What do you get with a membership to Simon's Recreation Complex? Warm indoor pool, relaxing hot tub, steamy sauna, racquetball, exercise classes, exercise equipment, strength equipment, and lots of help from new friends. Important for us to read the book, and I think to get it, because we you know, sometimes we're kind of preaching to the choir here, but your book getting into some major cities, I think that's important too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I'm very, very glad and fortunate. We've got a publisher in Skyhorse, and they're distributed nationally by Simon & Schuster, so we're going to be all over the country. I'm doing events everywhere. That is a mind-blowing thing for a local farm boy to be thinking about. I never thought I'd be in this kind of a position, but I'm really glad that it's also available locally as well. I've got events coming up next week in Milwaukee. I've got events in Spring Green locally here, and so it'll be available nationwide, and it's also going to be available next week and at Arcadia Bookstore as well. So
that's awesome. Your event in Spring Green, can you tell us when that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's at 6 p.m. next Thursday, August 22nd, 6 p.m. on Thursday at Arcadia Books in Spring Green. And, you know, it's an interesting week in events because that's me Thursday night. There's another great event on Tuesday at Arcadia Books with the author Sarah Smarsh. That's at 6:30 on August 20th. She wrote a book called Heartland. It's also an amazing memoir about growing up in farm country in America and what that means today. So love it if people could get out to Arcadia Books on Thursday for my event or on Tuesday for Sarah's event. And books are also available online. My book's available on Amazon and everywhere else as well. But anybody who can get out to a local bookstore for an event or to buy the book, we really appreciate it. And we appreciate people supporting local business as well.
Brian, you know, we've talked a lot about farming's past. How do you see it as the, you know, in the future?
Yeah. You know, it's a world that is very exciting. The resilience of farm families, those that are still standing, is incredible. And when you combine that with how interested people are in where their food comes from, there's a real opportunity. So the way I look at it is, you know, dairy is going to remain a really crucial part of the Wisconsin economy, and cheese making and all of that is really important. We got a lot of people who have a lot of land that can't necessarily go only toward growing crops to feed their cows because the scale of dairy farming is getting bigger and bigger, and not everybody is necessarily able to keep pace with that. Now, our farm's an example of that. We sold our cows in 2021, but we are still raising custom heifers for other dairy farms. We're raising beef for consumers, and we're also raising a wide range of cash crops and diversifying that all the time to figure out the different things that we can buy and sell to continue to make a living. And so I think diversified farming is going to be something you see from a lot more farms. Some might continue to do traditional farming, but have some other side crops on the side that they're finding there's a market for. And I really hope that our country makes some changes in terms of our policy, in terms of how we arrange our economy, so that more people can have more ways to buy food locally and create more opportunities for those farmers as well. I think there's a world where we can do that. And we do explore that in the book near the end. We look for paths to try to find that direction.
I think, too, we have to be concerned about a vulnerable food supply here in this country, don't we?
Yeah, we really do. And we saw that during COVID. And it is also true whenever there's an outbreak of something, whether it's something that's affecting animals or whether it's something that shuts down a factory. You know, COVID was a difficult time. And whether it was because of the spread of the disease or whether it was because of the government action to try to contain it, one way or another, there were large parts of our supply chain that were shut down. You know, we had farmers locally who were having to dump their milk. And that came at a time when people in the grocery store, consumers in the grocery store, were trying to find the items they wanted on the shelves. They didn't always find them. And that's part of the reason that food prices soared so much faster. It wasn't because the farmer's food was more expensive. It was everything happened after the farm gate. And when all that food supply got stalled, it led to disruptions. People didn't have what they needed and led to higher prices. And we'll face that more, and we'll face that again whenever there's an outbreak of a bird flu, for instance, or anything like that. There's going to be more times like that. And that's why harnessing our local farms, finding ways to make those 2 million farms able to make a living and able to supply more of our types of food in new and more ways is good for us, because it means that we can have more paths from the farm gate to the dinner table for our food. That's good for our farmers, and that's good for our consumers in the event of a disaster. So I think it's something we can do, and I think it's something we really urgently have to do.
Another issue that you discuss in the book, Brian, and we've talked about it on this program a time or two, but the real mental health crisis among farmers these days.
Yeah, it's true. Mental health is a very important issue. As many of your listeners know, there's an incredible organization called the Farmer Angel Network that started, in Sauk County not long after a local farmer, unfortunately, and tragically took his life. And, these are hard issues. It's really hard to face. But boy, when you get talking about them, you realize you're not alone. And we've talked about that in our own family. You know, we have in the book, we have passages where my dad is really having some dark thoughts after the sale of our cows. And we worked through it. And, what got him through it is thinking about his grandkids. And that is something that is so special. And I'm so glad that that's where our story went. But so many stories don't. And when people don't talk about that issue, they feel alone. And so part of the reason we're sharing some of our difficulties with that in the book, and part of the reason that the work of the Farmer Angel Network is so important, is because it lets people know you're not alone, And farm families, we grow up knowing how to work, and you put your head down, you get it done. And that's a good thing. But it's also a mindset that can keep you from talking about the things that are bothering you. And farm families, they get the work done, but they also need to look up and be willing to share, hey, I'm having a hard time here. Because if you do that, it's something that can be worked through, and you'll find that you're not alone. So there's strength in speaking up, not shame, but it's something that we need to work on to do more of and encourage more people to speak up.
Brian, do you have another book in the works or something in mind?
There's always another book in the works. I think that there are stories to tell about rural communities all over this country. I think a lot about the way that a lot of our small towns have been fading, and some of them are making incredible comebacks. I think there's things around that. So I think about stuff on that. I think about other stories from my family. There's a lot back there. It's a rich history that we have here locally, and I want to continue to tell it nationally. For the moment, I got my hands full making sure that we get the word out on this book, but I've got some more things cooking, and I hope to continue to be able to tell some of the stories that I say are the hidden stories of rural America. They're evident to us here locally, but nationally, people don't know, and I think they need to, because it's important what's happening here, and it's having a big impact nationally as well.
We talk about a lot of serious issues, and we have during our talk here today, Brian, but there's a lot of good times on the farm, too. It'd be hard to imagine life if you hadn't grown up on the farm, wouldn't it?
It really would be. Some of the best times that I will ever have are on our land. I remember in the morning, my dad, just with one whistle, sending the cow dog out to the pasture, bring the cows in. I can still hear that whistle in the morning. I remember, we would have snow days, and my dad would turn the light on in the feed room. And if the light was on and the door was open, we knew school was called off. And I think about driving on our land with my dad at night, and he'd check the hay to see if it was dry, and we'd watch the sun come down over the land. It is an incredible thing, as so many people who are listeners of your station know. It's an incredible thing to grow up close to the land, and I cherish it. So many of us cherish it, and that's the thing that makes it all worth it. This way of life that's becoming more difficult and disappearing is such a beautiful thing, and we're really lucky to have it. And that comes along with some of the difficulty, and that's life. And I'm happy that we live in a place where you can see that on such full display.
Ryan has been noted in such publications as Newsweek, Today, Yahoo News, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and now on the morning show on WRCO. How about that? You finally made it.
Absolutely. That's when I knew I was big time, I guess, huh?
Well, it's an awesome book, and I hope a lot of people in Southwest Wisconsin will take note of it. Again, Brian, you'd like to meet him next week in Spring Green, wouldn't you?
I would. I would love it if they came by at 6 p.m. to Arcadia Books on August 22nd. And I'm just humbled by the opportunity, and I thank you so much for having me on.
Brian, it's good to catch up with you again. Thanks for reaching out to us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, Phil.
You bet. Brian Reisinger joining us. He's the author with Local Roots. And again, the book is Land Rich, Cash Poor. This is The Morning Show.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Mark, I've been at some visitations lately, and I've enjoyed some videos and different pictures and things like that. How do we decide? Is every family kind of unique in what you want?
Yeah, every family's a little bit different on what they want to display. Some families like to put out lots of physical pictures on boards or frames or mementos and do videos and all those other things. Some families just want a simple picture, maybe not have all these different things put out for display. So it's up to each individual on how much you want to put out for display or what you don't want to put out for display. But we usually like to have a little bit out there to help people remember who these individuals were. So something that's become a lot more popular that you brought up is slideshows. So a lot of people either have digital pictures or physical pictures, and we can put those together to make a slideshow either for the visitation or for the obituary page that people can watch, maybe that couldn't come, that can see different parts of your loved one's life. It's also a great way to get your family involved in, you know, different people have different pictures of your loved one, depending on the relationship with them. Are they early pictures? Are they newer pictures? Things like that. But then it also allows people to kind of grieve in their own way and remember them fondly to look through all the digital pictures they have or physical. The reason I bring up digital is because if you talk to most people, they haven't printed a picture in about 15 to 20 years. So we run into that a lot of, well, I don't have any pictures. Well, if you have them on your phone, we can use those for different things. So you don't have to go to a store, print them off simply to put them on a board, which I think is a big reason that the digital's become a lot more popular is people don't have them. Other people are concerned of, I only have physical pictures. Well, how do I make them digital? Your funeral home can do that for you. They can scan them in. They can put them on the video for you if you want. There isn't really a restriction on the number of pictures. There are a lot of programs do have a top end number, but it's a pretty big number that most people don't reach. A lot of times we recommend people do maybe 1 to 200 pictures, which may sound like a lot or not a lot, but it gives you kind of a representation of who that person was when they were living, different activities, family members, you know, events that they participated in. So that's on the digital slideshow part of it. Some people really like to do the boards because they do physically get to touch the picture. They get to look at it. There's more of a conversation with that because digital is so much quicker and the physical just takes more time that sometimes there's a lot more stories shared when the pictures are being put together because you have to touch it. You look at it. Who's this person? Do you remember when we did this? Those events kind of lead almost to more stories as opposed to a personal reflection of who are these people in the pictures. Other times for mementos, they'll put out their hobbies or interests. We've had one comes to mind where a gentleman, you know, had collector trains and brought some to the visitation for people to look at and different models. We've had people that were stone collectors and brought them in. And sometimes it's for people to take home, you know, take home a stone in remembrance of this individual or maybe different hobbies. We had a lady that collected Dutch shoes and her family brought them in and wanted everybody to take home a pair of Dutch shoes, which led to a great conversation of all these different shoes and where do you get them and the stories behind them, which was really comforting for the family as well to be able to share those stories of this is why mom collected them and kind of the story behind it.
I saw one with guitars one time as well.
Oh, there's all kinds of really good things out there. There's guitars, there's tractors, and we've had a motorcycle inside the funeral home. There's all kinds of different things that you can do that represent that life, which a lot of times lead to a lot of great stories. Sometimes it's the items that lead to some of the best stories of, you know, the things they collected, or maybe a plaque, or maybe you forgot they got an award or a picture. So the displays help us to remember that person, not only the people putting the displays together, but the people that come that may have been involved in that picture or didn't know any aspect about that person's life from those pictures. Or maybe you're coming to a visitation and you don't necessarily know the individual that died. You know one of the kids. You know, you might be a business associate and you're not from here and you want to come and pay your respects. Well, those pictures help to give everyone a great representation of who that person was, of what was important to them, what they enjoyed in life, what was special to them.
I think personally, I can see both sides of it, but I think the digital, you can sometimes see the pictures better.
Oh, yeah. And the one thing that we like about the digital is sometimes, you know, the picture is up there usually for 6 to 7 seconds. It gives you a little bit of time to look at it. But then we can upload it onto our website. So then you can go home, you can look at it. You can actually pause the video. You can look at it. You can watch it at your own speed. You may just really want to go back and look at one picture a little bit better. So you have more of an opportunity maybe to see it several times or to look at a picture or if it's blown up. And then you can also have a conversation. You can also do captions on the pictures if you want to, because sometimes it's a picture, you may know who it is, and like I mentioned earlier, who these people in the pictures are. You know, it might be written on the back of the photo, but if it's putting out a board, people don't know that. But you have the option on the digital is to also write, you know, who that individual is. So down the road, people can still remember who these people in the pictures are.
Today's Pratt Chat has been sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. For answers to the questions you have, call the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service at 608-6000.